Welcome to Wired for Impact. My name is Peter King, and I'm the host of the podcast. In these episodes, I sit down with world-class creators, entrepreneurs, and leaders to find out their backstories, who they are, what they do, how they do it, and why they do it. The conversations are intended to enlighten, educate, and inspire you to become the best version of yourself. Collectively, we can and will make a difference. We will create impact.
This episode, I sit back down again with author and Army Ranger veteran Scott Chapman. This is a part two of two conversations, or actually it was one conversation that we decided to split up into two parts. The first part, we talk about Scott's experience in Afghanistan as a Ranger and also some of the private contract work that he did with celebrities, as well as over back in the region with Blackwater and the CIA. In this conversation, we transition into Scott's perspectives on electricity and God and spirituality. It's fascinating, and he's got a very interesting and fascinating perspective on that. So please enjoy this part two with Scott Chapman.
All right, so we are picking up. This is now part two. Took a little break. We had a fascinating conversation a little bit ago about electricity.
We did.
Connect the dots between some of this and that.
I always say that context is what makes a black and white story come to life in Technicolor, mm-hmm. right? So I have to paint a lot of context in order to get to the electricity conversation. In order to understand that, you got to know a bit more about me and my interests. You know, first and foremost, I'm a fan of science. Physics just blows my hair back. I absolutely love science. I can't get enough of it because I need to understand the why and the how of something to get to mentally process it or to get past a block, mm-hmm. right? I cannot just take something as faith, right? Religion, for example, I can't just take it as faith. I need to understand the physics or the how and the why, mm-hmm. right? Well, let me back up a little more. Let me go back in time. 2015, I was injured and unable to redeploy to Afghanistan. So contracting overseas was done. So I launched a business, a small security business, West Palm Beach, providing vehicle roving patrols for apartment communities. So we did very well. I was new franchise of the year. I owned the business for 3 years before I sold it. It was a difficult business to run. The multifamily security industry is difficult. Of course, as a new business owner, I wore all the hats. I was the salesman, I was HR, I was a security officer. So I did everything initially. So the way the business worked was the security officer would arrive at a property, do a security patrol, 10, 15 minutes, you type a little report, you go to the next property, do a security patrol, type a little report, go somewhere else. So all night long, the security officers are bouncing from apartment to apartment to apartment. These patrols took place overnight, right? So again, as me being the owner, once I was done with my sales calls, I threw on my security hat, and I jumped in the security car and I did my patrols. So the point of understanding this is I'm a captive audience. So here I am now owning this business where I'm incredibly busy during the daytime. I'm burning the candle at both ends. It's stress was absolutely through the roof. But once I was in a security car, I couldn't return emails. I couldn't research business ideas. I couldn't have business conversations because it was in the middle of the night. So the only thing I did was listen to lectures, right? YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. I like to say that I've really lived in a time capsule for 10 or 15 years. I haven't had the time or the mental bandwidth to really study the things that really just, again, blew my hair back, the things that really interest me. So now I had that time because I'm in a security car doing these security patrols. And I would have my earbud in and listen to lectures, listen to science, you know, figuring out, okay, what does E equals MC squared mean, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why is that important, you know? So during that time, I began to take a strong interest in the sun, our local star. Mm-hmm. Okay, these natural solar cycles that are super interesting to me, right? Learning the history of how we first developed the awareness that the sun operated on periods of increased or decreased output. It's fascinating stuff to me. And I came across this whole segment of scientists and researchers who were jumping up and down about, hey, there's this event is happening where the sun is going to do this thing and everyone should be warned about it. Well, I'm a pretty confident person. Like, well, you know what? Let me research this. I got nothing else to do. All right. So instead of binge watching The Office, or, you know, let me just jump in this conversation to try and poke holes in her story. Not for anything to be disparaging against them whatsoever. I'm curious.
Let me understand it.
Yeah, let me argue. Let me learn both sides of it, right? Mm. I like to learn both sides of every story and then make up my own mind.
Mm-hmm.
So as I began to really learn more and more about what all these scientists were like trying to tell people, I came to the realization that, holy cow, I think they're right. Like, wait a minute. It was a pivotal moment when I realized, like, wow, I think these people are right.
What, right about what?
About this solar event that's currently happening, about the sun's magnetic fields are moving out of phase, and it's causing a diminish in total solar radiance, TSI. So we're going to receive less energy from the sun, causing a 30 to 40 years of extreme cold on the way.
Interesting. When is that supposed to start?
2030.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's all concerning how the sun's magnetic fields interact with each other. So the sun has four magnetic fields. And what's happening to the fields now is they're out of phase or out of sync. So as one goes up, one goes down, like a sine wave up mm-hmm. and down. But 2030 is when these fields are going to be the furthest apart.
Mm.
So the sun will be producing the least amount, right? So we're going to have extreme weather moving forward. But that's a whole other conversation. Mm-hmm. So as I'm really just kind of deep diving into this interesting event that's happening with the sun, something really strange happened that changed the trajectory of my life, or really just changed my perception of the world. So up until this time, I was a pretty hardcore atheist. Well, something happened September 23rd, 2017. So when I'm really deep diving and learning about this solar event, I'm learning about stars, and I came across this event called the Revelation 12 sign. And it happened on that day, and you know, I was, you know, acutely aware of how, you know, the planets moved. But this particular formation of stars and planets was foretold in the Bible.
Hmm.
And for someone who, you know, at that time, right, it was a hardcore atheist, like it didn't compute to me, right? How is this super unique alignment foretold in this book, right? So we have the information now. We have star chart modeling where we can go backwards in time, forwards in time, because we know the math, how planets orbit each other, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we know where things are going to be, so we can move around. So there's these planets and stars, right, with these constellations that is foretold in the Bible. And star chart modeling said that this particular formation has never happened and it will never happen again.
Hmm.
And it happened like around this time, like, you know, when I was deep diving into sun research. Right. So that, I mean, that just added fuel to my burning desire to understand how and why. Right. It, mm-hmm. it was fascinating to me.
Where was it in the Bible? Do you recall?
Yeah, it's a Revelation 12, maybe 12, 15. I can look it up. We can add it in notes.
Yeah.
It's called the Revelation 12 sign.
OK.
If you just search that name, it'll pop right up.
OK.
It's funny. I was watching Vikings a couple weeks ago. And in season 5, the priest, he says that verse.
Oh, interesting.
I heard it. I was like, wait a second. And I open up like my Bible app, like, wait a second. Like, oh my gosh, it's the same, you know, it's the same verse, same, like, you know, so he's looking at the moon talking about this particular event. And it's not a 1 day event. It's a 9 month event where Jupiter moves back and forth of the womb of this constellation. I forget who it was, but Jupiter moves throughout the womb, then gives birth. Right. So it's a story. Okay. So it's super odd. Right. So how now is this story foretold in the Bible with this factual event that has to do with math and science and physics? So, you know, it wasn't that moment that I, you know, changed my point of view, but I realized, I always say, the more you learn, the more you realize what you don't know.
Right.
Right.
Socrates said that, I think.
Yeah. Well there you go.
I know is that I don't know anything.
Yeah. Well, there you go. So I put that on the back burner and I figured, well, I'll figure that out later. Right. It's just an anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
So I continued on this solar research. And so over the course of this time, I'd save tons of charts and graphs and lectures and papers. And, you know, because I've been, for 3 years just trying to tell people about it, like friends and family, and just, hey, let me explain this thing to you. And I came off as like a manic crazy person. Right. Because I'm just barfing science on these people, talking about solar dynamo and, right, I mean, like magnetism and cosmic rays and magnetosphere. And I'm like, people have no idea what I'm talking about, but like, I got to get it out. I got to tell you. But I realized, well, let me try and say it a different way. That didn't work. Let me try and say it a different way. And it didn't work. I realized that it's just a puzzle, right? Like, all of this is just a puzzle. We don't have all of the puzzle pieces yet, I don't think, but we have enough of the pieces to realize what the picture is. You know, really, I think ultimately as a species, that's our goal, is to figure out the puzzle. So it's our job to acquire knowledge, right, to get enough of the puzzle pieces to figure out the path moving forward.
The puzzle meaning life, what the purpose is, that kind of thing? Or
well, in this reference, I'm talking about the charts and graphs and pictures and papers that I saved. So they're in this giant folder on my computer, and I just started reorganizing them, right? Oh, this is the first group of series of things, and this is the second group of series of things. You know, I put all this information together as page one, page two, page three, and I turned it into a presentation. So I realized that all these scientists were all telling the story from their own specialized point of view, but geologists aren't talking to mathematicians. Mathematicians aren't talking to astronomers. Our astronomers aren't talking to people who are experts in cosmic rays, right? So all these PhD level, you know, smartest people in the world just don't have the full picture because they're so hyper-focused on the one super selective area of study, right? Well, we need that. But you also need someone to be able to take a step back and to look at the big picture, right? To look at the wide lens and say, oh, everybody has a little piece of the puzzle. Let me just put it in the right order for you. So that's what I did. I put this presentation together, and there's like 75 pages. It's a long presentation. It takes me about 2.5 hours to go from slide one to explain the last slide.
It's a dissertation.
It's a lot of effort, man. So, but I have to explain 2 hours of science in order to build the context and to get everyone on the same page, so the two slides that are the punchline has the weight that they have. So you can see, oh, it's all concerning how the sun's magnetic fields interact with each other that determines how much energy Earth receives from the sun, right? It's pretty simple, right? But it takes a long time to get there in order to paint the context. So anyway, so I put it together in this presentation, and not with the purpose of giving a lecture anywhere, right? I just so I can tell my friends and family, hey, I'm not crazy. Like, this is what I'm talking about. I'm trying to tell you, but you don't have 3 years to sit and read these papers. Let me just, here's the cliff notes, and here's the charts and graphs, and here's what I'm talking about. Well, I decided to actually present this lecture to a like a local farming preparedness group because I knew they were interested in the subject. So I contacted like the guy running the thing, and you know, I gave my presentation. I thought, okay, I feel validated now. Like, because people aren't throwing tomatoes at me, right? Like, I'm right. You know, I know I'm right. Like, I know I am. Then I got connected with this guy. Well, I was connected with him all along the way, but he actually, his business flew me to Texas. So I gave this presentation to a room of energy CEOs, I mean, millionaires. There's a billionaire in the room. Like, people who are in control, like, food distribution networks, right? People who control, like, energy and, like, in, you know, like, you know, in Texas, right? I mean, major, major players. And I gave this 2.5 hour lecture, little old me, all right, on solar dynamo and how the sun is connected to the earth and magnetism and the cosmic rays. I go through the whole gamut of explaining, like, what this stuff is. And it takes about an hour into like my long dissertation before I saw everybody's face. I saw it when it finally clicked. I can see that they finally understood what I was talking about. And it was like an aha moment for every single person. I saw it. And it was, so I thought like, okay, if I can convince these people, like I'm not that good of a salesman, right? I mean, if I could convince these, you know, millionaires and energy CEOs and billionaires of, hey, maybe global warming's been a lie for 40 years, but here's why, right? Or man-made global warming, rather. So anyway, so I thought, okay, I can put this down. I've been studying the sun for 3 years. I've been near manic obsessed just learning about this because it's so interesting to me. I thought that was it. Like, I can set this down. I can learn something else now. I can figure out, you know, why this Revelation 12 sign was in the Bible, right? So feeling pretty confident. So I actually emailed my presentation to Dr. Valentina Zarkova. So Dr. Valentina Zarkova is the mathematician, the PhD mathematician, who I base the final two punchline slides on her work. I didn't ever expect a response, right? Because who am I, you know? Just some guy, right? So anyway, so she responded. I was coming out of the gym and, you know, I checked my phone and email from Valentina Zarkova. Like, oh my God, like a starstruck. Like, I was like beside myself. I don't ever talk to anyone in the gym. I don't have any friends. But I wanted to share it with someone. Like, oh my God, look, it's Valentina Zarkova, right?
Yeah.
I get starstruck by scientists. I could care less about sports ball. I don't care about politicians. I don't care about anyone that TV tells me to care about. I would be beside myself. if I could have a sit-down conversation with Dr. Brian Greene or James Sylvester Gates. These are the people who I look up to, these physicists. Anyway, Valentina Zarkova, she actually emailed me, responded like, hey, this is really good work, and I can't believe you're not an astronomer. Like, wow, like giving me praise. I was like, finally, like, I thought that the meeting in Texas was like my final validation. But now actually Valentina Zarkova, you know, validating it. Like, I thought I'm done. Well, it gets better. So shortly after that, I was CC'd in an email chain. Dr. Zarkova had included about 5 people in his email. Most of the people were in there that I referenced in my paper. They were respective industry experts in geology, cosmic rays, mathematicians. I mean, it was like the who's who, like this, of these people who are all, again, respective industry leaders, little old me, right? CC'd in this email, and she was starting the conversation about this conference that she was hosting in like 8 months. And, quote, she said she was wanting to try and get world leaders to understand what's happening. And she included me because I viewed it as a puzzle because I had more of the pieces and they didn't understand it. I had my big reply. I gave my opinion. Here's what I recommend. Hey, the order of information presented is critical for the full understanding. You need to paint the picture. And I have this long email, much more articulate in the written word than a spoken word. But I sent them my 2 cents. And I don't know if that conference ever took place or not. But that was my final validation moment. Like, I know I'm right. This is happening. But I see contradiction with the media lots of places about this.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting.
It's very interesting. Yeah. Now, you asked me a very interesting question. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that before when we spoke before about electricity.
Right.
Would you ask that question for the audience so that they can kind of
So this segment of the conversation started with, you know, asking electricity, and I had to paint the context, right? Mm-hmm. Understanding about the sun, right? So my love of science, my obsession with learning about solar dynamo and magnetism, and I can't get enough of physics. Even to this day, I'll sit around and listen to masterclass lectures on theory of relativity where I don't know the math. I'm hearing people say it and hoping it'll eventually, you know, diffuse in, right? But I'm listening to debates on string theory or listening to debates on relativity or understanding quantum mechanics. I mean, that's difficult, man. That's fascinating stuff. So just having a broad understanding on just trying to figure out how the universe works. So I started to have a wide lens, right? Understanding quantum mechanics or understanding relativity and how they interact with each other, why they don't, or understanding, you know, the laws of thermodynamics and entropy, right? I mean, these broad, broad mathematical laws that are the fundamental operating system that govern the universe, right? Mm-hmm. Once you have that understanding, right, well, it's inevitable you have your own ideas, right? It's inevitable that, well, if this is true, then maybe that's true. Or if this is true, then maybe that. And if you follow quantum mechanics, for example, and, well, if this is true, then that's true, it leads you down this spiral that, well, it might be possible that every time I make a decision, a new reality is created, right? Multi-world theory. There's arguments for that, right? Or there's arguments that we're living in a simulation. There's valid, valid arguments that this quite could possibly be a simulation we're living in, right? Or we're in the Boltzmann brain, complicated thought experiment that we are essentially the consciousness of a brain that is in space that has one of many possibilities. Anyway, super heavy stuff that I'm not doing justice. But the point of it is, you know, my passion is physics. My passion is science, right? I like to ask the question, what is electricity? You know, we use it every day. It's everywhere and it's nowhere. It's all around us, but no one really knows what it is. And I love asking this question to people because I typically always get the same response, right? Oh, it's energy, right? Well, yeah, but you're just describing it. Like, what is energy then, right? What is electricity? Or what is magnetism? I would argue that electricity, magnetism, and energy are all one of the same. Like, the 3 states of matter, solid, liquid, gas, right? It's just three different forms of the same thing. Okay, well, but what is it though? What's electricity, right? I've asked this question to numerous people, like electricians. You know, they know how to use it, but they don't. They give me answers on how to create it or how it works, but like, what is it, right? I've even asked this question to, he was an engineer, not a physicist. Engineer who, in the Navy, he was responsible for the maintenance and daily like upkeep of a nuclear reactor, right, of an aircraft carrier. So he contacted me after one of my articles was written and, hey, by the way, what's electricity? And this guy is a nuclear advocate. He knows his stuff. And the answers he gave me were exactly what an engineer would give me, right? It was a copy and paste from a textbook. But all that did was describe how to make it or the properties of it, but mm-hmm. what is it, mm-hmm. right? No one really knows what it is. So I would, again, love to have a sit-down conversation with Dr. Brian Green about, hey, let's talk about electricity. Because electricity is really, in essence, the fabric of the universe. Everything uses electricity to some degree. Like, for example, the thoughts in my brain right now are being created because neurons are firing electricity, is making connections, mm-hmm. that's sending electrical connections to my muscles to contract, right? To have my muscles move, to make noise for you to hear it. It's just connections in my body making these things happen, these mm-hmm. processes happen, right? Mm-hmm. Our heart is electromagnetic. So everything about us, we're electromagnetic beings. We radiate a magnetic field. We radiate energy. So again, what is electricity, right? So we don't truly know what it is. And I think that's interesting. So let's talk about energy. Think about a rock of uranium. So this little innocuous rock, it's not even that pretty looking, right? but the amount of energy that's stored in this rock is unfathomable. It can level cities. It can power cities, right? It's incredible. And that the energy has always been there. Once we discovered the math, the energy didn't just appear. Mm-hmm. It's always been there, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It just took us to evolve to a certain threshold where our complete understanding of mathematics crossed that threshold where, oh, we now understand how to extract and use that energy to mm-hmm. our detriment or to our benefit. So that energy is always there. It just took our growth and knowledge to extract it. Well, with electrical power plants, are they creating electricity? Because we didn't create energy in uranium. We just discovered it. Mm-hmm. It's always been there. Mm-hmm. So are these power plants creating electricity? Right? I would argue no. I'd argue they're not creating electricity. I think they're harnessing it. The same way we would harness energy from the uranium, well, we're harnessing it. Well, what are we harnessing it from? Mm-hmm. The universe, mm-hmm. right? All around us. There's electricity in the air molecules mm-hmm. in between me and you right now, mm-hmm. right? I mean, on the basic fundamental level, atoms, the center of an atom, or your nucleus, you have positively charged protons, you have negatively charged electrons, mm-hmm. right? Positive and negative are states of electricity, right? So again, it's everywhere and it's nowhere. It's the connection, the glue that holds everything together. I mean, the sun, right? Our species lives and dies by the energy the sun gives us. Mm-hmm. Well, the sun's magnetic fields are a form of electricity, okay? So these magnetic fields interact with us. So again, electricity is vital to us as a fragile species, but we don't really know what it is, mm-hmm. right? So going back to that growing threshold of knowledge, this bubble of knowledge, well, once we cross that threshold of understanding mathematics, well, then we unlock achievement level uranium, and mm-hmm. We unlock the energy. Well, if that bubble is expanding, we'll think back to Big Bang, right? Well, if the universe is expanding, then therefore at one time it had to be very small. So it's the same concept with human beings, right? The moment you were born, you know nothing. Your bubble of human knowledge is a singularity. It's condensed down to a single dot. So as you begin to learn and take in knowledge, your bubble of knowledge begins to grow ever so slightly. Mm-hmm. And it grows slowly because you're a baby crawling around. Well, then you soon realize you're in a house, you're in a neighborhood, you're in a community, you're in a city, you're in a state, you're on a planet, right? It grows and grows and grows and grows. Mm-hmm. So the rate at which this bubble grows follows the laws of mathematics, is what I would argue. And we'll go into that in a second. So you're growing your personal bubble of knowledge, right? Everything that you know, everything that's in your head, all the thoughts, all the ideas, everything you know is in this sphere, this bubble, right? Well, as you begin to go to undergraduate and graduate, get your PhD. Well, when you get your PhD, what do? You learn something that nobody else has figured out. Right? This revolutionary new idea, new thing. No one in the course of humankind has figured out this molecule or this particular thing. Mm-hmm. So what do? Your personal bubble of human knowledge brushes up against the sum of human knowledge, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And you make that sum of human knowledge a bit bigger, mm-hmm. slightly bigger. You exist within the larger collective of everything that we know during this cycle. So everything that we know is within this big sphere that we're residing in it. And it's our goal as humans to acquire more knowledge, to grow and advance, to keep on thinking, be innovative, right? Grow and expand as this collective, this giant sphere of total human knowledge. Mm-hmm. And I say total human knowledge with an asterisk because I mean this cycle of humans. Well, what's super interesting is that total human knowledge lies within the warehouse, right? In a much larger system of complete human knowledge of all human history.
When you say this cycle, you mean people alive, or do you mean known history?
I firmly believe that we've had cycles of humans on this planet. I don't think aliens are always the answer. I think it's always been us.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the past 400,000 years, if you look at the temperature of the planet for the past 400,000 years, the average temperature is ice age, right? You have five periods of ice age, and in between these ice ages, it's called interglacial. And these interglacial periods, what we're living in now, it's when the planet isn't in an ice age, right? So there's five periods of these interglacials over the past 400,000 years where humans could have survived.
Mm.
But they wouldn't survive this ice age, right? Not all of them perish. And then once the Earth warms back up, they start over again, right? So cycles of humans, cycles of rise and fall, right? Everything in the universe operates on a cycle of rise and fall with the factor of entropy not allowing 100% of the energy to be transferred. So this bubble of complete human knowledge I'm talking about, and this is all these previous cycles of civilization. And this warehouse, I'm calling it, this bigger system, it's called the Akashic Records, right? So it's a sum of all human knowledge, right? Past, present, and future, which is super interesting about that. So how is that possible?
Right.
Well, Einstein's general theory of relativity talks about the past, the present, and the future all exist simultaneously. So what are thoughts? Well, thoughts are electrical connections in your brain that you vocalize. Well, now these thoughts are out there in the universe, right? These thoughts are out there in the space between you and I right now. So they're in the Akashic Records. They're in the system we can download. Well, if electrical connections, right, are your thoughts, the first law of thermodynamics states that energy cannot be created nor destroyed. So therefore, if all time exists simultaneously, then every thought, every invention, it's all accessible. It's physics, and it's absolutely fascinating to me. So now if we have access to all of this information, how do we get to it? People can access it, and I think people throughout time have been able to access it. You do it through meditation. You do it through being healthy, opening your third eye. I would be an advocate of psychedelics, right, to advance your ability to see different perspectives, right? So all this information is available, but we need to realize it's available, right? We can't get there until we get past the block.
Have you done plant medicine?
No, I have not.
Meditation?
I meditate as much as I can, but not as much.
Okay. Have you accessed this grander warehouse?
I don't think I have, no.
Mm.
But I don't even know, like, what you would experience if you did.
Right.
I mean, I would argue that, I mean, Einstein and Nikola Tesla, like, these people maybe we're possibly tapping into it, right? But not knowing what they're doing. They have new thoughts and ideas. And it's not a flash of light. Again, I'm drawing wild conclusions. I wouldn't say it's a flash of light. No, I'm here. I made it, right? It's just, oh, I have a new idea. I have a new thought. This new thought that you think you made yourself, but you are given to because you were able to see the bigger picture.
Yeah. It's my understanding that there are these alternate dimensions of reality, if you will, that are available, but that it requires a different way to access it. Whereas it's almost like, how do you take the infinite and collapse it down into something that we can put parameters around? Well, you can't do that. You're never going to understand the infinite if you try to bring it down to our working knowledge right now. So therefore, is it possible that we can access it, but we have to, like, forget or let go of these very influential ways of being?
Right. I'm sure you can.
Well, so yeah. I bring that up because some of the stuff that I've experienced with meditation recently, and even some plant medicine, has expanded my understanding of what I would call, and I'm borrowing this from Dr. Joe Dispenza because I've done a lot of work with him in his events, tuning into higher frequency,
right,
almost as if we're antennas with the ability to tune into higher levels of consciousness.
Absolutely, right? Because all we are is vibrating strings, right?
Yes.
So those strings vibrate at a certain harmony. So if you can change the frequency, right, of these vibrating strings, you can tap into this new resource where,
yes,
you can have a new perspective or, you know, change your mind on something.
Yes. And he aligns what he calls energy centers, these knowledge bases. You know, you talked about that there's all this data that's being taken in. I mean, feet on the carpet, for example,
right,
my heart beating, my digestive system. There's built-in intelligence that I don't have to consciously think about that is absolutely at work. One of the things that he talks about is how does a gene know to grow into an arm versus a leg? They're the exact same gene.
right?
As far as we understand it. And so is it possible that there is this higher consciousness that we could literally measure in terms of frequency that our traditional human experience isn't fully aware of, and that some people like monks or Native Americans seem to have tapped into this higher thing? So I actually did an ayahuasca event a few weeks ago.
Oh, interesting.
With the Huni-Kun tribe.
Oh, wow.
I had this incredible guy that made this connection down in the tribes of Brazil and was able to bring them up to the States, and
right.
they did a 3-month tour. I was in the last.
Super cool.
It was wild.
Wow.
And the way that I've been explaining it to people is that it forces you into the vibration of knowingness.
Right, right.
And it's powerful. I mean, it's beyond human comprehension, but it's incredibly profound. But that is literally what it felt like. And in order to do that, you have to, like, again, the way that I've been trying to explain it to people is, like, it pulls you out of ego.
Right.
We don't realize how much of our reality is informed by our five senses.
Oh, totally.
And the example I give is when we think of the Grand Canyon, why do we call it the Grand Canyon? Well, it's grand in proportion to our human ego's perspective.
Mm-hmm.
We don't realize that if you were small enough, if you were microscopic, that there's a Grand Canyon on the table right now that we don't even see. This looks like a flat table, but there is a magnitude of grandiosity, of beauty, of, you know, mind-blowing aesthetics right here, right now, that we just don't see because of our ego.
I mean, that's
ego.
Actually one of the arguments for multiple realities. Think about a power line. You're looking at a power line, you see one cable. Well, think of an ant on that power line. Right? It could traverse it in a circle. It sees things from a different angle.
So here's the big question. Do you still identify as an atheist?
Absolutely not. No way.
Well, how do you self-identify?
I would say, let me get to the finish line on this.
Okay.
Let me get to the finish line on this. So... we're talking about this expanding bubble, right?
Yes.
So now your knowledge is increasing, and, you know, it lies within the warehouse of the Akashic records. I came across a study not too recent ago. It's called the 100th Monkey Study.
That is a mouthful.
It is.
Yeah.
The 100th Monkey Study, or the 100th Monkey. It sort of confirmed my bubble hypothesis. So what these scientists did, I think it took place in the 80s. There was an island inhabited by a bunch of monkeys. I don't know exactly how many. I don't think they know either. But either way, the scientists would pour buckets of sweet potatoes on the beach every day. And the monkeys would all come from the trees and they'd, you know, hoard all the sweet potatoes and eat them right there. The monkeys loved them. But you can tell the monkeys were eating them kind of slow because they're covered in sand. They weren't pleasant to eat, but the monkeys loved the way they taste. So the monkeys kept on doing that, eating these sandy sweet potatoes until one of these younger monkeys just started washing it. Right? They took the sweet potato, washed it in the water, washed all the sand off, and you see her devour this sweet potato, right? Eating it faster than everyone else. So the monkeys tour left and right, you know, monkey see, monkey do, right? You know, started washing theirs. So this revolution took place on this island of these monkeys. Now they're all, you know, slowly, you know, not all at once. It took a long time. I don't know how long. I'm sure the study will give exact numbers. Mm-hmm. But slowly but surely, at this crawling pace, all the monkeys started to wash their sweet potatoes before they ate them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, something super interesting happened. At some point, I don't know, they call it the 100th monkey, but I don't know exactly if it was the 100th monkey or not, but it crossed a threshold where monkeys around the world started just washing their food before they ate it, right? And it was something they weren't doing before because other scientists were studying other monkeys around the world,
mm-hmm.
not for this particular case, but they realized all at once, they just started all washing their sweet potatoes at the same time. They're not getting on the phone and sending emails, right? You know, so what happened? Like, how did that information transpire or cross these oceans in order for these monkeys to just all start doing the same thing? Well, I would argue it's consciousness, right? Because we're all connected. We're all the same, right? We're all made of star stuff. We're all made of vibrating strings and molecules, right? From the smallest level, I'm connected to my wife the same way I'm connected to a tree in Africa,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we're connected through electricity. Right? It's all the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this information was passed to these other monkeys,
mm-hmm.
right? Whether through, you want to call it consciousness, or through electricity, or just their expanding bubble of knowledge. But either way, what it is, it just proves that you cross a certain threshold and something happens. And it's
mm-hmm.
interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I see it as an expanding bubble. So, well, the rate at which these bubbles expand has a speed. Now, I told you it was just one monkey at a time. And then two, and eventually three.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the speed wasn't in the study, but the speed at which the information is growing or crosses thresholds mm-hmm. is all based off of mathematics. Mm. Mathematics is the language of the universe, right? Ask any physicist, ask anyone who knows anything about science, mathematics is the language, and it describes how things work, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I see mathematics as almost a porthole, right, into understanding the hidden operating system that governs us and everything about us, mm-hmm. our social interactions, or, you know, where I should move, right? Or should I wash my, you know, sweet potato in water or not? We're all connected. So the rate at which it grows is based off of mathematics. And that mathematical rate of growth, it wasn't observed until computers were all in the picture. So it's called Moore's Law, right? So Moore's Law is just concerning computers. It's the observation that the rate at which computers' processing power would increase. Okay, so on average, about every 2 years, the computers would be twice as fast, and every 2 years, the transistors would be twice as small. Okay, so, you know, of course, they couldn't realize this, you know, when computers were first created, mm-hmm. but over time, over decades now, you can put it on a chart, and you can see the speed of computers, and on the chart, it goes up in a near 45-degree angle up and to the right. That's unusual, right? I mean, there's no straight lines. There shouldn't be any straight lines in nature, but it's following this mathematical equation. Mm. So the rate at which computers are becoming faster and smaller is being dictated by mathematics, mm-hmm. right? Scientists aren't sitting around saying, okay, well, in 2 years, we need to be twice as fast.
Yeah, work twice as hard.
Yeah. So see, it's not a conversation that's taking place. It just happens naturally through the course of human ingenuity.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Well, there's a point of diminishing return. You can't divide zero. There's a point at which computers can only get so fast, right? Well, then you cross the threshold into quantum computing, and that's a different conversation. But there's a point at which where the laws of physics now inhibit your ability to have better or faster technology, because electricity moves at the speed of light, right? And you can't go faster at the speed of light. So, right, the bubble mm-hmm. is expanding. Can't get any faster than or smaller than where we're headed. Mm-hmm. So what happens after that? I would argue that the entire universe is based off of the rules and laws of Moore's Law, right? So look at fractals. Moore's Law is another way to say fractal, right? So, okay, what's a fractal? So if Moore's Law is only concerning computers, fractals is concerning everything in this closed system universe, right? So fractals is the concept that everything is divisible. Let me say it differently. Scientists created, it's called a Mandelbrot set. So the Mandelbrot set is the result of the mathematical equation that describes patterns within this universe. So let's bring that down to a different, an easier example. The mating habits of bunnies, right? Left alone, left unchecked, right? Just following the laws of the universe. They have thunderstorms. They have, you know, predators, right? Natural environment. If you leave these bunnies alone in this natural environment, their numbers over time can be predicted using mathematical equations that deal with fractals. Mm. There, of course, there's one-off situations where there's a flash flood, right? Or bunnies get hit by lightning. I mean, anything can happen, right? But over the course of a large enough sample, you can mathematically predict exactly how many bunnies there's going to be, mm-hmm. right? And the reproductive rates. Mm-hmm. Well, the bunnies aren't deciding to do this based off of wanting to match that number. Just through the natural evolution or the natural course of their daily lives, it's following this mathematical equation, right? So this mathematical equation, you can put it in a computer, and it creates this image, a beautiful image. It's called the Mandelbrot set. So this beautiful image, it's like a big black sphere, and there's like a bunch of other bulbs coming off the left and right, but all along the outside of it are little spires. And if you zoom in, it's the same image. So the more you zoom in to this image, it's the same thing over and over and over again. And that goes into infinity, mm-hmm. right? And it's constantly going at the same image, just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, right? Well, this is the physical representation, one of the laws that govern our universe, mm-hmm. okay? So an easier way to understand it, right? If everything is divisible by itself, then let's look at art history, right? So how is this Mandelbrot set play a factor in us as a species? If fractals define everything about us, well, then how does it define art history? Well, the first period of art, caveman times, right? Again, in this cycle of humans. Mm-hmm. Caveman times was a super long period of art. because we were cavemen for a long time, right? Well, the next period of art, generally speaking, is half as long. The next period of art is half as long. The next period of art is half as long. The next period of art is half as long, right? And it keeps on going and going and going until we're at this point now where, again, you can't divide zero, right? Computers can only get so fast. So you're in this postmodern, there is no art, right? Where we've reached a ceiling. I mean, a couple years ago, I saw someone sold a banana that was taped to a wall or something at Art Basel. It's just ridiculous, right? So there is no art anymore, right? So the point of it is fractals, Moore's Law, is a factor in the way humans have created art. That's unusual to me. That's strange. I would even argue that fractals and Moore's Law can be injected into even how we act, you know, our interpersonal relationships, right? I mean, look how divided we are as a nation right now. It's dividing and dividing and dividing. It's bigger and bigger, right? So what are the drivers of this thing? Well, these mathematical equations are the rules and laws that govern our species. Well, I would say electricity is the mechanism at which it makes these mathematical equations true. Still, what is electricity? Okay, so let's imagine this. I like this analogy I have about this pickup truck. All right, so imagine you've got a pickup truck and you park it in the woods. If you leave it there long enough, there's going to be no indication that there's ever been a pickup truck there, right? You know, let's say you park it there and you come back 12,000 years later. I'm using that number on purpose.
Okay.
Right, so you come back 12,000 years later, you come back, and nope, there's no truck. Right, where'd it go? Well, it turned back into star stuff. It turned back into the basic components that made the truck. So on a grand scale, the cycle of that truck, the materials were exploded from a star. Star went supernova, right? These particles now formed a planet. This star stuff, we figured out how to make metal, we figured out how to make rubber, we figured out how to make glass, we turned it into a truck, and then that stuff will eventually fall apart back into this basic component, which is star stuff. And on a much larger system, so will Earth disintegrate, right? The sun will go supernova and the cycle will start over again. So that's the large, big picture, you know, cycle of that stupid truck in the woods, right? Star stuff, truck, star stuff. It's all a big cycle. But you don't, all the energy that's used to create that new truck, 100% of the energy isn't used. There's always entropy. So entropy says that there's always unusable energy in the form of heat. So back to this truck in the woods. So everything operates on a cycle. Cycles of rise and fall. Every single thing has a cycle. Our star operates on a cycle of rise and fall, right? There's cycles within cycles. If we know that's true, right? Just, again, on a grand enough scale. So let's go back to that truck we're talking about now. It's a manual truck. Crank it on, you slam into clutch, you put it in first gear, and then you slowly press on the gas. Okay, so what happens? The truck begins to slowly inch forward, right? This is the birth of that cycle of humans, right? So you're at one RPM, right? As you press that gas pedal, right, you're pressing it at the rate of Moore's Law. You're pressing it at the rate of fractals, right? You're pressing it, right, from 1,000 RPM to 2,000 RPM. It takes a long time, very long time. But you're slowly pressing that gas. So your RPM is at 2,000 RPM now, right? You figured out the wheel. Again, it takes half as long to go from 2 to 3, or from 3 to 4, right? So you figured out the wheel. You figured out animal husbandry. You figured out farming, agriculture. You figured out how to get to the moon. You figured out physics. Now you're talking about trying to get to Mars, right? I mean, the truck is now at 8,000, 9,000 RPM, right? Well, what do you do next, right? You slam in that clutch. RPM goes back down to zero. You put it in second gear and you start over and do it again. Okay, so let's reverse that now. So what happens? You slam in that clutch, right? RPM goes to zero. The sun does what it's supposed to do, right? Hey, you guys didn't figure it out this time. Let's go ahead and reset, try it again, right? Then you second cycle of humans. And then now these second cycle of humans, right? You're in second gear. You got to figure it out before you're at 9,000 RPM and the sun says, oh, you didn't figure it out this time. Let's do it again. Drop that clutch, RPM to zero, right? You emerge from the ice age and you figure it out, right? So it's your goal as a human being, as a species, to figure out how to break out of that cycle, right? So I ask, who's driving that truck? And I would say electricity is driving that truck, right? Well, then what is electricity? So what if electricity is God?
Would you possibly say it's the manifestation of God?
I think it's
in our physical realm, in our human,
as much as I know about science and physics and like nothing is off the table, like nothing, right? Because quantum mechanics and you know, thermodynamics like says every possible reality is possible, right? But okay, so what is electricity then? It's a combination of magnetism, energy, and electricity are all one and the same, different states of this one entity that we call God. So, I mean, electricity is even used to describe how people feel, right? Hey, don't be so negative, right? That's an electrical term, right? Hey, be more positive. Well, we all know that if you're more positive, if you're an optimistic person, right, you attract more positive things in your life. Mm-hmm. And this isn't woo-woo magic. This is real. We know there's power to being a positive person. We know that people who are negative typically attract more negative energy, right? So, you know, be more godlike, right? Be more positive. Don't be so negative. Mm-hmm. So even the positive terminal is a crucifix. I mean, I think it's interesting. So again, so what is electricity then? Well, I mean, it could be God or who knows, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, aren't we made in the image of God? Or we're just a cluster of cells? Then when does consciousness enter the conversation? Mm-hmm. Like when we're one cell or that cell divides? Is that when we're now conscious? Or, you know, all we are is, you know, a shell. So we're a portal for electricity to be heard. So, I mean, word of God, right? I mean, like, this all goes back to the Bible. It's fascinating stuff, man. So I like to say that I discovered God through understanding science and physics, because I had need to understand the how and the why of the thing.
Those are big whys and big hows.
Right. It's fun stuff to talk about, right?
It is, man.
Because there's a lot of physicists who, you know, who are also philosophers. You know, scientists, engineers are typically black and white, you know, one or zero. I think you need to have philosophy in order to truly understand physics on a much more broad scale and with a wide lens. It reminds me of Ludwig Boltzmann, one of my favorite scientists. He's most known for the Boltzmann constant and his equations for entropy, but he was also a philosopher, and he's not known for any of that. How can you come to the mathematical realization that the universe is going to end? You can mathematically show somebody that everything that you know in this universe is eventually going to come to an end, right? That's it. Like, entropy is king. Mm-hmm. So how do you have that realization and not have any other kind of thoughts that, like, maybe God plays a role in there somewhere, right? Because that's really our only option for the universe, right? Oh, we're talking grand scales here, right?
Right.
Yeah, I've got a pretty big lens.
I mean, so on the philosophical side, it does kind of feel like we are at that 8,000 to 9,000 RPM and that we're, I don't know, how would you say it? I don't know, a great reset, you know? Like, we're literally using that terminology right now.
It's fascinating, right?
It is. Mm. Where do you think we're at?
I think we're at 9,000 RPM. So there, I also studied cycles of cataclysms. It's a terrifying subject. Earth, it's not a mystery, has had cycles of cataclysms. The evidence is there. There's no refuting it, right? I mean, you can even look at the moon and see, you know, crater impacts on the moon. We know asteroids, meteors, whatever, destroy the dinosaurs. So it's not this off topic that's quote-unquote conspiracy theory. We know these things happen. In fact, I believe that our ancestors tried to warn us about these things. Mm-hmm. Right. So, okay, let's go
in
back.
In a previous cycle, you mean, or absolutely. Even in our in this
absolutely,
cycle?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, let's go back to that truck in the woods.
Yeah.
That truck that you leave there for 12,000 years. Yep. Again, that number is important. If you have a message to pass to someone who is 12,000 years in the future.
Oh, it's getting exciting.
Okay. How do you do it?
Yeah. Because they're going to return to Stardust.
Well, 12,000 years. This podcast isn't going to last 12,000 years.
Yeah.
Nothing you can write, you know, on a piece of paper. What do? You pass messages in stone, right? Well, how do you know that the next cycle of humans are going to even speak your own language? Well, what's the universal language? Mathematics and astronomy. So every single megalithic structure on the planet, I'm talking about
Great Pyramids.
Pyramids.
Sphinx.
Yeah, I mean, every single megalithic marvel that pepper the planet are all aligned with celestial events.
Yep.
Right, they use sacred geometry in their orientation and construction. Right, every single thing about these megalithic structures is telling us to look up. Every single one. So what are they getting us to look at? It's called the precession of the equinox. The great scheme of things is called the great year. At the end of this precession of the equinox, generally there's cycles of cataclysms. It takes about 12,000 years. Right, every 12,000 years is a cycle. So going back to precession of the equinox. By the way, Randall Carlson, one of my favorite scientists, he's the expert on this. Randall Carlson is a brilliant person. Anyway, so he does a long, long series on cycles of cataclysm, and I highly recommend anyone who's interested to go visit his research, because I'm sort of butchering it right now. So, well, if all of these megalithic structures are telling us to look up, well, then what are they telling us to look at? What's the most important thing that you could possibly tell cycles of humans 12,000 years into the future? Well, maybe you can tell them that there's a cycle of rise and fall, right? Mm-hmm. So what if the past cycle had figured it out? They didn't have the technology to stop this event or to throttle it down. At least we can put it in mathematics. We can put it in these structures that we build everywhere, because they had different technology. I disagree that it was aliens who brought this stuff here. I think it's been us. It's always been us. We just different technology.
Do you have a theory as to what the technology is or was?
I probably to be able to alter gravity.
How does that work?
I don't know. Quantum gravity right now is like the knife's edge of like the most interesting research that we're working on right now. It's like the frontier. It's super interesting stuff.
And quantum gravity.
It's way above me. Like, I don't understand it yet.
That network Gaia talked about using sound frequency to move objects.
Yeah, it's plausible. I mean, who knows, man?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway, so what are they pointing at?
Well, if the people in the future aren't going to speak your language, right?
Right.
The cycle of catastrophe can be observed through observing the stars, right? So we have the constellations that go all around us. Well, when Earth rotates, it doesn't do so at a 90 degree straight up and down. There's a little tilt to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what degree it is. Well, even when it rotates on that pivoted angle, there's still a little wobble to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a slow, slow, slow wobble, but there is a wobble.
Mm-hmm.
And that wobble, to start at the 12 and go all the way around back to 12, takes about 12,000 years, right? I think it's true north. That's the arrow. So take that true north and point it, you know, straight up, and it points at whatever constellation we're in. You know, you've heard of the song Age of Aquarius, right? Well, you know, there's ages of, so these constellations, it's like a 2,000 or 3,000 year time that you're in that age. It's the Age of Aquarius or Age of Gemini, Age of Taurus. I think it's true north is pointing at that constellation, and it takes like 2,000 years, I think, to get all the way to the end of that age, and then the new age starts. So it takes around 12,000 years to make that full circle to go back to 12, and you're starting your ages over again. Well, historically, there is a cycle of cataclysms at that 12 o'clock marker.
I'm assuming we're getting close.
We're pretty close.
Okay.
Yeah.
What was it 12,000 years ago?
Around 12,000 years ago, yeah.
But what was the...
I think it was the Great Flood. Every civilization has a story of the Great Flood. I think that was it. Around 12,000 or so years ago, there was an event called the Younger Dryas. So the Younger Dryas was what a rapidly melted North American ice sheet. There was a sheet of ice 2 miles thick that went down from Canada like to the Midwest, right? I mean, all the way down, so 2 miles thick. Well, that ice rapidly melted, like in the span of like days. So
days?
Like what kind of energy?
Jesus.
Right? What kind of energy? How much energy would it take to melt that water immediately? Well, then where would that water go? So every culture has a story of the Great Flood, right? So this is where it's from. By the way, Randall Carlson and Graham Hancock, it's interesting because I studied this stuff and I came up to my own conclusions about past ancient societies and this cycle of cataclysms. And I've came up with it all on my own. And then I stumbled upon Randall Carlson and Graham Hancock's work. And they're essentially parroting everything that I've been like figuring out on my own. Right.
Isn't interesting.
And like those two are regulars on, you know, Joe Rogan. I mean, like some of my most interesting people to listen to, because they're all in alignment with like everything that I've been kind of figuring out on my own. You know, I may be parroting some of the things that they've said, right? But it's also I'm agreeing.
Self-found knowledge. Is
correct. Right. I'm agreeing with them. So I do have original thought.
Okay.
Right.
Good footnote to add.
For sure. For sure.
Within these cycles, you were talking about, oh, they didn't figure it out. Let's start over again. What are we trying to figure out? What are we trying to do, do you think?
Well, my opinion, I mean, this is my, again, speculation.
Of course.
Like wild speculation based off of like what I think might happen.
Intuition or whatever.
Yeah. So I think, how should I say this? How do we stop it?
I mean, I don't know necessarily how do we stop it. I have a theory. as well, but I'm curious to
Can you ask me that question again?
You were talking before about the RPMs and cycles, and they didn't figure it out, so let's reset. Like, where are we trying to go? What are we trying to get?
Oh, gotcha. Okay, so yeah, so the answer to that is acquiring knowledge, right? To access that Akashic Records, the sum of human knowledge. So we therefore have a way to figure out how to thrive when the sun's magnetic fields go out of phase and we recycle, do it again.
So during the catastrophe, finding a way to thrive through that?
Well, to figure out how to maybe manipulate the sun's magnetic fields, right? I mean, like think big, right? You know, like...
So avoid it in the first place.
Right, or stop it, or throttle it down, you know, like make these magnetic fields operate. Who knows, man? Like, you know, work in a different way. I know the answer is out there, right? There is a way to solve this problem. So just because the sun's magnetic fields are out of phase doesn't mean that, oh, we have 6 years left to figure it out and then we're all done.
What I'm theorizing is possibly what this is all about, quote unquote.
And when you say this is all about, you mean the universe or the reality?
The human experience, the reality, the age-old philosopher question of who am I? What is my purpose here?
Right.
Is it possible that we sort of in Matrix style, that there is this, we talked about the Akasha knowledge base. Is it possible that we all emanate from one consciousness and that we experience separation in order to learn and grow? The one thing that you're not when you're connected to infinity, when you're connected to oneness, the one thing that you're not is not part of that oneness.
Right.
So is it possible that we come to this dreamlike experience, this simulation, if you will, to experience the illusion of separation, to suffer, to grow, to better understand our actual true nature? So when we return to oneness, which is always interesting to me when people talk about near-death experiences, most often talking about seeing a light.
Right.
Well, why is that? And why do you talk about the sun? And why do we talk about electricity? And why is it positive energy? Like, there's a clear intuition here that we're all pointing to higher. Why do we get high when we smoke plant medicine?
Right, right.
Right? High relative to what?
Right.
So is it possible that higher consciousness, getting high, oneness is literally a higher frequency? And so on a scientific level, as that frequency band, this is the way that Joe Dispenza explains it, the higher the vibration, the higher the frequency, the closer the bands are,
right,
as I understand it. And he explains the Big Bang as you get further and further away from source, there is a anomaly. Yeah, there's an anomaly essentially that as the frequency bands continue to separate, there is a Big Bang.
Right.
And then there's this illusion of separation. And so is it possible that we have this body, which is essentially hardware, it's an antenna. We have our pineal gland that is essentially the antenna that produces DMT, which is a chemical that gives us access to higher frequency.
Right.
The people that I've talked to in Joe Dispenza who have popped, they call it popping because there's a physical phenomena where the pineal gland calcifies, and there's an electromagnetic, I'm trying to sound smart, I don't know what I'm talking about, but those words are in there somewhere. And there is a chemicalization that occurs, a mechanical reaction chemicalization where there's a massive DMT release. And it feel, they call it like, they say it feels like a champagne bottle, popping.
Right.
So in the Joe Dispenza world, they call it popping. I've spoken to people who have popped this last spring. I took my whole family, including my ex. My son is very spiritual. He's got high love in his heart. Everybody that interacts with him talks about his,
right,
he's so full of joy and all this kind of stuff. So scientifically, high frequency.
Right.
When we went there, and I've experienced this to some degree and other people have popped and they've experienced this too, but it is a, you tap into electrical current. You feel the electricity, and I've tapped into it a little bit and you're not moving, but the energy is flowing through your body.
Interesting.
And, oh my God, there was this one time where we do what's called a healing ceremony, and you bring in somebody who's unwell, sick, has a disease, whatever. And the first event that I went to, and you get into groups of eight, there's something about groups of eight. Have you read that book? I think it's called The Power of Eight. Hmm. There is a threshold, the monkeys, right? There is a threshold with eight. When you pray, when you have, in Joe Dispenza's words, electrical thought with electromagnetic energy wave, the thought is the information on the wave. When you target it at somebody, the way that he explains it is it takes disorder and it divinely organizes it.
Okay.
Which, if you look at, you know, those experiments where they have the metal, black metal plate with a bunch of sand on it, and it's on a speaker,
right,
and they tune the frequency up, or and it
different shapes.
Yep, right, goes right into different shapes. When I saw that, I was like, that's healing.
Hmm.
That's what Jesus did. Jesus's high frequency targeted at somebody, took disorder, dis-ease in their body, and divinely organized it into beautiful fractals, into beautiful shape. Right. When people have a psychedelic experience, why do they see fractals? Why do they see geometry? Because when you have the frequency waves that overlap, they create these beautiful things. It's like, this isn't coincidence. There's science here.
Yeah, it's interesting, man.
Right? So my theory is, and again, some of this has been contributed to by people in the Joe Dispenza world, is that we are these infinite beings. We do have individuality,
mm-hmm,
that we selectively come to this earthly experience to experience this illusion of separation, not necessarily to suffer, but if you are off alignment from divine truth, you will experience lower frequency, which is another form of suffering, to better learn and better understand your true nature.
Like a karma.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. What was really fascinating was they had a walking meditation. We were in Mexico and we're walking up and down the Mexican Riviera. So beautiful beach, sun setting. Everybody puts their headphones on and we all essentially push play more or less at the same time. We get all out there and we all start. And it's a guided meditation. So there's music. Dispenza's walking you through this. Mm-hmm. I went and did it. Sun is setting. It's beautiful. I had a pleasant experience. Wasn't necessarily earth-shattering. I go and I'm putting my shoes on and one of my friends comes up, she slides in, she's like, did you see the orbs? I was like, no, what are you talking about? She goes, the orbs over the ocean.
Oh, interesting.
I'm like,
yeah.
I'm like, the, like a boat or something? She's like, no, hundreds of orbs. I'm like, no, I didn't see that. She goes, yeah, there was hundreds of orbs, light orbs over the ocean. And I was like, you all right? You doing okay? You know? But then I started hearing other people. There was probably 1,100 people there at the event.
Right.
Hundreds of people were all talking about the orbs.
Really?
So, again, is it possible that's in, like in that moment, they're tuning into higher frequency, which is antithetical to our human ego experience. When we are perceiving things through our human ego, we can only stay within a band of frequency.
Right.
And so in order to tap into higher consciousness, we have to let go of ego. Joe Dispenza talks about going into the void. Mm-hmm. And when I first heard that, I was like, ah, it sounds kind of dark. It sounds a little bit kind of scary. What do you mean go into the void? Well, what he means is, and he says this all the time, he says, you become no thing, you become nobody,
mm-hmm,
in nowhere, at no time, with no thing. Nothing, nobody, nowhere. If you were to remove all five senses, but you were still consciousness,
right,
would you not be in a void?
Oh, I see.
Right?
Yep.
In a sensory experience.
Right.
And then therefore, I think people go through that when they reconnect to higher consciousness.
Right.
Is it possible that those people, they were able to sense, not through their five senses, but through another type of sense,
right,
which maybe when you go to communicate it is an orb. And then I also heard that that there are other entities that are higher frequency entities that they don't like coming to this lower density, and they're waiting for us to raise our frequency collectively.
Right. Or to cross that threshold,
yes,
to expand our bubble of knowledge, to get to the point where we can unlock this new
picture
of the universe.
But I would, the way that I would tweak that a little bit is say more than just the bubble of knowledge, it's
right,
the frequency required to access, yep, that knowledge.
For sure.
So to me, it's the one, they're one and the same.
It's one and the same.
Yeah.
I see the same thing. So your question is all that possible? Mathematically, yes.
Yeah.
Right. Mathematically, anything is possible.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, if you follow math and, you know, take it seriously,
yeah,
it leads you to some super interesting places. So one of those places is that any outcome, any possible outcome could be true.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you could be president of the United States and I can be a basketball player,
yeah,
right? So any potential outcome has happened and is happening in alternate realities.
Yes.
So according to mathematics, your question, you know, are we increasing our vibrations to move into this next threshold? Well, yeah, of course it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Mathematically it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's the answer, but to me, what you're saying makes complete sense.
Well, some of the experiences that I've had deeply reinforces that.
Yeah.
It's embodied, right, and not just theoretical for me personally.
So maybe this is then the next new frontier for, yeah, for science, right?
I think it is.
because energy is everything.
Yes.
You know, I mean, what is energy? So it's interesting stuff, man.
Very interesting.
If this reality that we're living in now is true, well, then other realities must be true. So there's this, it's called the Boltzmann brain. It follows the vein of multi-universe, right? And any possible outcome can happen. It does happen. Okay, well, if that's true, right, all the molecules in the known universe could spontaneously form a brain. There, you know, there's nothing else besides every molecule is just a brain, because statistically that's just as probable for a one-to-one. That's just as probable as this reality.
This conversation right now. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But if you take the full scope of every possible outcome, that's highly unlikely, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that one snapshot, that one now slice is of having these molecules in this particular arrangement is just as likely, right, in that one now slice as this now. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So what's this brain now? So if that's an option, right, if having every single molecule in the universe to form this human brain, well, then what if we are just the thoughts of that brain?
Yeah.
Right. So that's the Boltzmann brain.
It's very similar to how I think about it. I mean, I consider it God or consciousness,
right?
But it's structurally, it's the same concept.
Right. Everything's energy. I think this is an opportunity to work together to figure out how to solve this incredible problem we presented, to figure out how to thrive when the sun's magnetic fields go out of phase and we recycle, do it again.
So, yeah.
You know?
So how big is this problem, do you think? And I asked you sort of generally, are we at 10,000 years? Are we like 11,999?
Pretty close.
10 months?
Like, well, it also, it depends on like which scientist you're talking to, right?
Right?
There's some that 2030 is it, that's drop dead time, right? 2030, if we can't figure it out by then, like everyone's going to know what's happening and like everything's going to collapse.
Is this why the globalists are operating from that year? Because they have Agenda 21, now it's 2022, and they have a whole great reset centered on 2030.
That's a great question.
That would be a pretty big coincidence if it was.
Yeah, yes, sir.
Is it possible that they know things, that they have access to things that, you know, us little monkeys don't?
Absolutely. So, like, for example, like, so going back to the sun, Westerners, right? We originally started to measure little dark spots on the sun, like the day after we figured out a telescope. You know, within the same week we've invented a telescope, we're looking at the sun, realizing that, oh, it's rotating. Oh, these little black spots are appearing and disappearing. Oh, wow, let's draw them and copy them and save these charts, because who knows what this stuff is. Either way, scientists doing scientist stuff, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, our sunspot data helps us see, oh, there's cycles, right? Oh, then you add information like tree ring data or ice ring data, right? Geology, to see a much larger picture. Again, this is a complex subject. We're looking at now sunspot data. We're looking at from roughly 1600 until today. That's not that much time. Well, the Chinese, for example, their records go back centuries, mm-hmm. right? Thousands of years, maybe, who knows? But they don't share that data mm-hmm. with the rest of the world.
Mm-hmm.
So they see the sunspot data. They know like what's happening, right? I'm a firm believer that a lot of this, the turmoil that we're seeing now, all this like crazy shit,
yeah.
it's not because of this is happening. It's as a result of how we interact with the sun's magnetic fields.
Mm. How we interact or how we respond or react to the energetic fields. You know what I mean? Like, is it a cause effect kind of a thing?
Good question. So we already established that we are electromagnetic beings. We radiate energy. We're connected to the planet through electricity, right? We're all one. We're all connected. We're all made of vibrating strings or molecules, right?
Mm-hmm.
Vibrating molecules.
Mm-hmm.
I'm made of the same thing as this microphone in front of me, as I am a tree in Africa, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're all made of the same basic components.
Mm-hmm.
On that level, we're connected to the planet because we're all in harmony. We're vibrating, right? We have a frequency. Everything's energy. So if we're connected to the planet, right? Well, then the planet is connected to the sun through streams of energy.
Mm-hmm.
So when the sun's magnetic fields change, it affects our planet. It affects our magnetic shield. It's called the magnetosphere. Earth is just a giant magnet. You have North Pole, South Pole. And you have a big magnetic shield that radiates outwards, right? And it protects us from a lot of things, but holds our atmosphere in place. But it's also a magnetic field that we are connected to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that magnetic field right now is in trouble because the sun's magnetic fields, they're going out of phase, which is causing our magnetic shield, our magnetosphere, is currently weakening at an alarming rate,
mm-hmm.
right? So much so that our North Pole and South Pole are racing like away from their current known typical locations.
What do you mean?
that magnetic North Pole is not where it's supposed to be.
Huh, really?
The same with the South Pole. They're racing towards each other. Scientists have recently discovered that a pole flip, right? North Pole becomes South, South becomes North. That event can transpire in one single human lifetime. Wow. Right? It's not a gradual tick, 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 like melting of a glacier that they used to think, right? No, it can actually melt in a week. Well, how? So they realized that a pole flip can take place in one human lifetime. It's terrifying. Well, then look at our poles right now. They're racing towards each other. They're racing towards each other on the backside of the planet where they're furthest from. You know, it's more open to space, right? It's less protected. And that area is called the South Atlantic Anomaly. It's a weaker spot in the magnetosphere. So anyway, so as the sun's magnetic fields go out of phase, it causes our planet's magnetic field to go haywire, right? Which is happening right now, right? Again, since we're electrical beings, as we're connected to the planet, right, our frequency changes. So this is why I believe that people seem to be waking up right now, realizing like, oh my God, I've been a slave my whole life, right? Or realizing, wait a minute, maybe the U.S. government doesn't have my best interest in mind. Maybe all these politicians are all, not sure how far we can go on this. But anyway, there's this mass awakening, right, that people are realizing all these injustices and corruption and evil in the world. So I think this change in people's perception has a direct effect on how we are connected to the magnetism of the planet connected to the sun, right? So all of these events, when I see like terrible things, I really try and stay apolitical in this, but, you know, seeing, you know, Trump's house get raided and then this FBI's like ridiculously redacted reason why they raided them. It's absurd,
right?
So everyone, you know, I know is angry at that, but I see that as, well, this is a good thing because it's one more no before a yes, right? In sales, you had to get 99 no's before they give you one yes. So, all right, one more no, closer to yes. So I know the further we fall in this vortex that we're falling into, the more awake people are becoming. I get excited about bad news because I know good's on the way, right? The point of that is understanding like how we were connected like to the planet.
Let's go to the good news. Because, I mean, it really does seem like a perfect storm of everything collapsing, which does tend to be nature's way. Replenish, burn away the infrastructure.
It's a natural cycle.
It's a natural cycle. Is this survivable? Do we get through it?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to sit here at your house and tell you, hey, humankind's going to end in 6 years and mankind's done, right? No, absolutely not. Like, I mean, humans have been here for, you know, 400,000 plus years. Who knows how long we've been here for? We're not going anywhere. I mean, I know that we're either going to figure it out or there's hard times in the future.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know to what degree of hard times, but either I know that, hey, we're going to solve this problem this time, right? We're going to figure it out. We have all the tools necessary. We have all the math. We have access to the information, right? We can do it. We need to break our chains of slavery is the best way to describe that because there's only a handful of people that control everything about this world, right? There's only a handful of people that control everything. They're keeping us divided. They're keeping us poor. They're keeping us fighting each other. They're keeping us killing each other. And they're just profiting off of everything. I always like to say that none of us have escaped slavery. Like, none of us, right? We're sitting in this beautiful house having this nice conversation, but you and I are still slaves. Just like the best kind of slaves are the ones who don't know they're slaves, right? So I think we're in the midst, we're in the final throes of breaking these chains of slavery and unifying as a species.
And to me, it's that it centers around consciousness.
Absolutely.
And that slavery is an unawareness of our true nature. And therefore, is it possible that in that awakening that we vibrate a different frequency? And that then we are as creators, as reflective of the great creator, if you will, is it possible that we could alternate the trajectory of...
Absolutely. I think any timeline is plausible. But I always lean towards the optimistic timeline.
Yeah, why not? Well, I mean, honestly, you have to have the vision of where you're going before you get there. And that is thought. And that is frequency.
Yep.
And so the more of us that have our sights locked in on a brighter future, the more apt we're going to persevere. How does this all boil down to you in like your daily actions? Do you wake up and do anything differently than...
How do you walk around with this information all the time, right? Like, for example, let's go back to Ludwig Boltzmann, right? He's an Austrian physicist, 1806, I think is when he died. He figured out mathematically that the universe is eventually going to end, right? Through heat loss. everything will eventually decay because there's never 100% energy transfer. There's always a bit of unusable energy, right? So that unusable energy is entropy. As entropy increases, there's less and less matter available, mm-hmm. right? So that will eventually lead to the heat loss. So there's no more heat in the universe. So everything is dead. Everything turns into a black hole and those black holes collide and poof, you got maybe another singularity, another big bang. So, but that's, no one knows after the heat loss exactly what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. He discovered this. Mathematically, this guy figured out that everything is done. And he was troubled by it. In addition to the entropy, he also was arguing that we're made of atoms, right? Until that time, no one believed in atoms. Mm. And he knew he was right, right? So he went around having these arguments, that he's right. He knows he's right. And it was difficult because he was never accepted. His work was ridiculed. And he fought and he fought. He wasn't even invited to big conferences. He had to go to like a philosophy conference instead. In this one event, they wouldn't let him in the main part because it was pseudoscience. But he knew he was right. Plus to have this information, right? This hey, we're all going to die. The universe is going to die. So he was walking around with this information. And unfortunately, it was too much for him. And he killed himself. Mm. It's actually super sad because, or maybe a couple of years after he killed himself, Einstein and Max Planck, I think it was, came out and confirmed, Boltzmann is right. Mathematically, the laws of thermodynamics, the second law, it proves that the universe is done and, atoms are real. Mm. But imagine, this poor guy to walk around with this information, right? Mm-hmm. Hey, I have this clear, crystal clear roadmap. I see what's happening. I always say I'm an objective observer of my own reality, right? I can stand outside myself and analyze things. Mm-hmm. This poor guy, right? Think about the anguish he had. Mm-hmm. Everything is relative. So I think about this guy's anguish and compared to mine, this is, I live my life to satisfy 2, 3, 4 different timelines at once. I make decisions to satisfy every timeline being true.
Do you have an example of that?
For example, long-term food storage, right? Well, if I 100% believed, beyond a shadow of a doubt, this timeline is true, I would spend a lot more money and resources to fill this stockpile, right? To move to a place that's off-grid or move to a place that is going to remain habitable. But I pay a little attention to that timeline by having some supplies, right? Mm-hmm. So again, that's what I mean by following a timeline. Gotcha. So the other timeline is, I still need to, pay mortgage, I pay my bills, and I got to figure out work. I got to move to a place that geographically would be a good climate that will also satisfy timeline one or timeline two. So these aren't conversations that I have with myself in my head,
yeah.
But this is stuff I consider when making big decisions.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Did you see Interstellar?
I did. Yeah. I wish I've never seen it so I can watch it again to watch it for the first time. Yeah.
Have you seen it again and see new layers in it?
I do. I watch it all the time.
Yeah.
Not daily or anything, but it's one of my go-tos. If I just need something in the background, the soundtrack is incredible.
Amazing.
I love that it's mathematically true, everything they're talking about. I love that it brings these wild concepts like time dilation to the average person who might not realize time is just relative.
It's a human concept.
Yeah. It's fascinating stuff.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Really I didn't cool. get it the first time I watched it. I was like, this is confusing. But then I started to learn about this stuff and I rewatched it for the first time. And I was like, oh, shit.
When I was in Minneapolis last year for the Derek Chauvin trial, I was working there.
We didn't even get to talk about that. I forgot about that.
Yeah, yes. There's a whole lot more to talk about, man.
I know.
So anyway, I was in Minneapolis last year for the Derek Chauvin trial. I was doing security. So my partner and I were just his buddy team at this commercial building. We had all night to sit and sort of watch a movie. So one of the things I like to do is I like to watch that movie with someone who knows nothing about this stuff. And I can pause it and explain it.
Mm.
I love talking about this stuff. Mm-hmm. So I paused it and explained it. And after the movie, he said, this is probably one of the coolest movies he's ever seen. Because he's now able to understand the science behind these visually stunning images.
The way that they depicted that was
brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
It was brilliant.
Right. Yeah, Kip Thorne, he was the lead consultant for all those images. I don't know if he had assistants or anything, but Kip Thorne was the lead advisor.
Interesting.
Yeah.
They were saying that the imagery of the black hole was the most scientifically accurate that we've ever been able to produce.
Yeah, yeah. I watched a short clip of Kip Thorne showing, because in the photograph of the black hole that was released a couple of years ago, it looks different than the image of the black hole that was in Interstellar, right? Well, your perspective is different, right?
Right.
In Interstellar, it has the event horizon where light bends, so you have like that line that goes through the middle. But in the picture that was released a few years ago, there isn't that line that goes through the middle, because you're looking at it from a different angle. In the video I saw, they took the photograph and they're able to twist it, and then it mirrored up to look exactly like what they predicted.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Ah, it's cool shit, man. It's trippy.
Yeah, man. Like I said, science blows my hair back. Yeah. It's interesting stuff. I mean, if anyone's looking to hire someone who wants to talk about science all day, let me know.
Did you ever say what you self-identify as?
What do you mean?
You're not an atheist, but you're...
Oh, I firmly believe in God. I think God is electricity, or God is energy.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, God is... It's all around us, right?
Indeed. I'm trying to think if there's any other loose ends, because we should probably wrap it up, because we got to get a lot of solid, good content here. Did you have anything else that you wanted to...
Oh, I've got a lot to say.
I know, man. I know. We need to do this again for sure. Right, we didn't even talk about The Ride to Nowhere.
Oh, geez. Yeah. The book I wrote. Yeah, that'll be part two.
Yeah. Give a teaser, if you would.
Yeah, sure. So 2019, I went wheels up on a motorcycle trip. It wasn't a pleasure trip. I was navigating numerous high stress events in my life, and I wanted to go dark and disappear, and I'm gone. Right? I'm going to be behind my motorcycle for the next 2 to 3 years, and I'm out. So I'm navigating these stressful events, and I realized that if I continue this trajectory, I'd be dead in a year. Anyway, I was headed to a dark place. I needed to do something drastic, because I needed a drastic result. Right. So instead of doing what I wanted to do and go dark and disappear, I did the exact opposite. I kept a public journal. So I kept a public journal on this motorcycle forum called ADV Rider. And I've always enjoyed writing. Even back in elementary school, I wrote this story about skeletons, like way back then. And the whole class was like, you know, all close and like interested in what I had to write. It was a cool experience. Mm. But I've always enjoyed writing, and I never realized how unique that I write. Like, to me, it's just how I talk. Or just how I describe things, how I look at things. I've got a different perspective. So to me, like, I didn't see anything unique about it, right? My mom's always told me I'm a great writer, right? My aunt too, my aunt Darla. But I've never really tried to hone it or do anything with it. So I kept a real-time public journal, and people were just magnetized by my written word and my ability to tell a story. It continued to fuel my desire to want to write more. Mm-hmm. So my goal was to keep a real-time public journal and write about the beauty along the journey, things that I saw and experienced, like, a basic ride report, but also pepper it in with my life experiences, right? Because there's stories that I have that need to be told, and, pepper my life experiences and thoughts and wisdom, and just trying to decompress, maybe just put my thoughts out there. So people were, like I said, they couldn't wait for my next entry. And I kept on writing and writing, and the trip unfortunately ended before I wanted it to. I don't want to spoil the ending, but trip ended before I wanted it to, and I decided to put that journal into a book. It's called A Ride Without a Destination, and it's like 300 pages. I say that in order for civilians to connect with the forgotten warfighters, you have to first understand who we are. And this manuscript is a transparent view into a broken Army Ranger.
Brilliant teaser, man. Dude, this has been one of the most fascinating conversations I've had to date.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure spilling my thoughts.
Yeah, it's been a true honor to listen to you today and have you on the podcast and read some of that manuscript. I'm 60 pages or so into it. I'm looking forward to finishing that up. Love to do it again.
Absolutely.
This is awesome. Scott, thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me. Thanks for hearing me ramble on about my ideas. Hopefully I can connect with a veteran or two. right? They can hear my words and realize it gets better, right? There's always a sun tomorrow, right? It'll be there tomorrow. So, you know, I think I have a different perspective. Hopefully that someone can gain some wisdom off of, you know, my experiences.
I'm assuming they can get in touch with you at scottchapmanauthor.com.
Yes, sir.
Any other places that they can reach out to you? Do you want to...
Yeah, sure. My website is scottchapmanauthor.com. Pretty active on Instagram, too. It's at scottchapman.adv. At scottchapman.adv on Instagram. And I think I also have an active Facebook and Twitter now, but I...
You're back.
I am back, which was actually, if you want
to... Yeah, I was going to say, what did you do to get banned?
So I was banned from Twitter and Facebook. Like 2.5 years ago, I was banned, permanently banned. Like, I would even... I had like a spare computer. Like I opened it up, created a new Facebook, and like I immediately banned. Like, oh, damn it. I had all kinds of different email addresses. I didn't have a VPN. I didn't really care. I was actually relieved that I'm finally like this platform is like out of my life.
Yeah.
So anyway, so I tried different email addresses for both Twitter and Facebook, and I was, you know, immediately banned. What's interesting is I created a new Twitter because I was interested in following some crypto coins. I was interested in following them on Twitter because they post more information on there, and I was actually able to create an account. Well, I thought, that's really weird. Was my like 2-year suspension like lifted? I'd never got any notices. Mm-hmm. Well, a week after I created that account, that's when Elon Musk made the announcement that just the announcement that he was going to buy Twitter. And it was a coincidence that I tried to create an account and was granted, right? So I wonder how much foreknowledge that Twitter had that he was going to come buy it.
The theory is they were cleaning up stuff before they had to reveal.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Because there was even a time when I was talking on the phone on a conference call with Freedom Birds, you know, a year ago. And, you know, the conversation was, hey guys, we just made a new Twitter post. Please comment and like, it helps the algorithms. So like, all right, I'm on the phone now. Let me try and do it. Right. You know, and as soon as I created it, like, hey guys, I'm in. I commented and I liked it. And then like 30 seconds later, I got banned. Right. So I knew just in that year time frame, like something happened. Right. Something's different.
I heard a lot of people got tens of thousands of followers. Joe Rogan talking about, just overnight getting, you know, 500,000 followers.
Yeah, man. It's all part of the system that keeps us.
Are these enslaved. CIA fronts? Are these, you know.
Who knows, man?
I mean.
Dude, I'm suspicious of everyone.
Yeah. Probably for good reason.
Yeah.
All right, man. Well, thanks again. This has been a crazy, incredible conversation.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Beautiful.